Well, given the scale of humanitarian need which we now face across our planet and in this globalised world where the world's citizens really do want to be effective and to make a difference to the lives of people who are under threat or have suffered for so long in protracted crises, or where climate or climate change is really making people's hopes for a future very, very worried. There's a massive opportunity, which we're very enthusiastic about, for the world's first ever World Humanitarian Summit. When you think about the numbers of crises around the world, yes, natural disasters has always been very much in our focus and remains so. But increasingly there have also been these humanitarian needs that come out of conflict, and then they often are protracted over a very, very long period of time. So the summit is a way of saying, let's come together, let's really understand how we can do it better. So yes, there will be talking, but there will also be commitments. And it's the commitments that will propel, with political will, with lots of heads of government, heads of state coming, with many, many countries represented, that will drive forward our agenda for the next few years.
And you've met many of those people affected by conflicts and natural disasters during your travels. Can you share with us any particular memories, any stories that impressed you in a special way?
Well, I was particularly struck by a family I talked to in Jordan who had had to run away from their home, flee, because it had been completely destroyed by bombs in Homs, outside Homs in Syria. And they had been in a host community outside Amman in Jordan for about 2.5-3 years, and with 4 children, and they were living on the food vouchers and they were just getting by. At that point, they weren't the head of the household was not allowed to work. That, of course, is changing, but it was impossible for them to see where their hope lay in the future. And what absolutely struck me when I said, well, do you want to go to another country or do you want to go back home? And he looked at me as much as to say, why do you ask me the question? Of course, the thing I want to do is to go back home. He said what you and I, everybody would want in a terrible crisis. If your children are under the threat of bombs, of course you flee. If after a number of years you can't have the hope that they can get an education, you flee to where they can. But above all, you want the circumstances to be in place so that wherever was your home is where you can get back to and start rebuilding your life and to give your family that protection and the sense of a future. And so that's where I really learned that in the end, ultimately, people want to live at home, safe, in peace, and to build their future. And that's why it was very important to look at the summit as a way of bringing together how do we make sure that, yes, we deliver, as humanitarians, the absolutely fundamental immediate needs when crisis hits for life-saving and for protection. But also, we need to work out how do we work with all those who are able to then help people survive and thrive. And it's that which I think is going to be the opportunity of a turning point at this summit.
As far as I know, the affected people and the civil society will take part in the summit. How prominent their role is going to be?
From the very outset, this has been a what is called a multi-stakeholder summit. Very often summits, or almost invariably, are a collection of the states of the world, the governments of the world, the member states of the United Nations coming together. And of course, they will be extremely important and prominent in the summit. It's very important that we have that level of heads of government, heads of state, over 125 of them committed to attending the summit, you know, making these commitments to action going forward and how we propel that forward. But that's driven equally, not least because we had such a huge worldwide consultation with the 23,000 people, the over 150 countries, and we had 8 regional consultations, making sure we really understood the whole drivers of crisis. And then we were able to put together a report which shows what are the big 5 key areas we need to focus on to deliver well for humanity. And at the summit, those who are leaders of NGOs, of civil society organizations, these will be very important and prominent participants. But going forward, equally, we have to have the political will. The
UN is sometimes criticized for being too slow, not very effective in addressing the needs of the people who are suffering, especially the Syrians inside Syria who are surviving in besieged areas or are being bombed. What can UN do, and what are the limitations of the humanitarian efforts?
Well, I think the first thing to recognize is that whenever anybody is suffering humanitarian need and there's a crisis, all of us want to be there even faster than we ever can be, because you know, we're all driven by this wish to help people in need. And so yes, there's always a very high degree of self-criticism by all the humanitarian actors, whether that's the UN or whether it's the NGOs or even governments. Everybody wants to be able to act faster than is often the case. But the speed of response is more often than not very impressive. But equally, when you get into a protracted crisis, particularly in the context of conflict, you've got to make sure you have a practical, secured, safe passage and unimpeded access to the people in need. And that is absolutely what the law demands. The humanitarian principles at all times say, wherever you are, when there is that level of humanitarian need, when there's that need for protection, it is the absolute demand that the humanitarians, whether that's the UN and their partners and their implementing partners and all those who are delivering humanitarian response, they should have safe, unimpeded access, because you can't load up a truck with food and shelter and medical items and then ask the truck drivers to set off on the route that gets you into a besieged or a hard-to-reach area, let's say somewhere in Syria, unless you have negotiated with all those on the checkpoints. Because if you haven't, there is a danger that the truck drivers themselves would then come under fire. And you can't ask people to take humanitarian supplies unless you have secured that negotiated safe access. It is, of course, the demand of the law that we should have that access, but in the end it has to be practically agreed as well. That's why sometimes it takes longer than we would like to be able to get those very important life-saving and protection goods to people, and to be able to evacuate people who are injured or in need of long-term treatment so they can get to the medical care that they need.
Last question. Chugwe Lee, I think the first Secretary General, called the job of the Secretary General the most impossible job in the world. I think your job is pretty impossible too. Do you sometimes get discouraged by the number of growing conflicts and people in need and the humanitarian actors being stretched to the limit?
Well, actually, I see it as a really extraordinary opportunity that there are so many people of determination and skill and goodwill who want to be able to make a difference to the people whose lives are the most suffering, who are under the most threat. The challenge and the scale of need is huge, and we have seen that escalating. About 125 million people today need our help and support. And it's extraordinary when you think that that would be the 11th largest country in the world, but they don't have a flag, they don't have a head of state. And as we know, we have to work very, very hard to raise the finances in order to be able to buy the commodities, buy the services, buy the goods that can be delivered to give life-saving and protection. And so, yes, you could get frustrated, you could get dismayed by the scale. On the other hand, as I say, there is a phenomenal well of goodwill, determination and skill which we can all try to work together to draw on in our respective ways. And so, yes, we have to be very sensitive to every context. Every situation is different, and we must reflect that. But at the same time, we will always be able to deliver more than 2 plus 2 if we are good at working together, being cooperative and collaborative, and making sure that we are getting the very best results in a collective way for all our collective effort. And respecting the individual contributions and bringing that together in a way which is really going to serve the people who need us most.